They need a Chinese-speaking consultant, said the recruiter, trying to convince me to consider what was essentially a contract position. I'd led people in projects before, but had never considered becoming a consultant who spends continuous months on-site at a client to assess, create, and then implement new processes. The client is a Dutch company. They have this annual 40-week continuous improvement program at their three major sites in Europe, America, and China. But this program fails in China every year, so the client requested a Chinese-speaking consultant this year. And by the way, you'd be working on-site at a Chinese state-owned enterprise, or SOE, in Nanjing for the next 40 weeks. It was a joint venture between China's largest state-owned chemical producer. Since the partnership began, they have essentially been trying to overcome the iron rice bowl mentality, or 铁饭碗, which still influences Chinese behavior to this day. Someone entrepreneurial who's willing to take risks and continuously seek better results has the polar opposite mentality of an iron rice bowl. That literally means you will never go hungry because you have a bowl that's always full of rice, the Chinese diet's main food staple. Now, in practice, someone with an iron rice bowl mentality wants to collect a paycheck with a comfortable job through maintaining good Guanxi relationships. When this mentality meets requests for new processes or ways of working, it responds with lip service, expressing what the other party wants to hear as a means to give and preserve face, or mianzi, without any real intention to follow through. Now, it's not difficult to imagine why these Western process improvement initiatives fail every year in China. Having effective meetings is the antithesis of exchanging praise during extended tea ceremonies throughout the day or drinking over dinner in the evenings. As far as my role, we achieved all our milestones and deliverables on time and exceeded the stretch KPI target along the way. The client verified the new process improvements were still intact 6 months later, so we avoided any contingency penalties had there been a reversion, meaning people aren't behaving one way when you are there and differently once you are gone. Before we continue, this story isn't about leading change in complex multicultural environments, though you may likely enhance this ability by getting the most out of this book. This book also isn't specifically about doing business in China, which would be overly broad, not to mention that China isn't homogeneous, as most incorrectly assume. That said, you should first recognize that China is a land of contradictions. Most people feel this way because they learn certain things about how Chinese people behave and then experience something completely different. You shouldn't be surprised nor confused by this because context, even subtle variations, may result in very different behavioral patterns. But rather than just telling you to have more situational awareness, I would teach you a balance of extremes mindset adjustment exercise to help you gain greater clarity and insight into the situations you'll likely encounter. In the end, this book offers a blueprint for delighting the people you were encountering in China and reversing the fortunes of inevitable disappointment along the way.
Anyone who's worked or lived in China long enough has experienced an unexpected disappointment, despite genuine intentions to be helpful, supportive, and even generous.
These unexpected disappointments are referred to as China Leadership Dilemmas, or CLDs, throughout this book. CLDs are symptoms of myopia and a lack of awareness, cultural, situational, and self-awareness. This book will help you understand cultural dichotomies and their implications, along with the ramifications of the words and actions you choose. We will even analyze how your attitude and persona may provoke an unintended negative emotion. In other words, we will pay careful attention to how you are perceived by those you seek to influence. Solving the China leadership dilemma means understanding the influence your attitude, mindset, and approach play in winning the China game, and then making continuous adjustments to achieve more favorable outcomes within its rules. You can think of it as training and conditioning to use the art of war against the art of war. PMS projects, or performance management systems, typically have four major milestones divided neatly into daily and weekly deliverables that track and monitor every input into the system to catch deficiencies in real time
to implement corrective action. We always begin with training to get project participants familiar with new tools and processes. For the local team in Nanjing, we began by teaching effective meetings, the cornerstone of all process improvement initiatives. Historically, this is when communication between the foreign consultants and the Chinese staff begins to break down. Imagine using a short leash to anchor your puppy away from where the children are playing and visualize her desperate attempts to break free and join the action. Puppies just want to play and not be held back. Chinese feel similarly constrained when forced to follow a tour or terms of reference to control who can say what and for how long during mandatory meetings every single day. Traditionally, Chinese people reach a consensus through an unstructured ritual of giving praise and offering empty promises that leave both parties feeling good about their egos. Thus, our natural tendencies, habits, and preferences are where cultural dichotomies need to be analyzed and then reimagined to get us into a state of mind that projects an attitude that improves how we are perceived. Yes, it's as simple as managing the perceptions of others, but the challenge is shifting your attention and making sense of nonsensical things. My Dutch predecessors never deviated from the project charter, which is why they came up short, even though everything they shared would have been beneficial. They also became aware that they were receiving lip service, but they were helpless to overcome it. Solving the China leadership dilemma, solving your CLDs, is about delighting those you would otherwise find difficult reaching an agreement with, and influencing their behavior and responses in a positive manner that supports your overall objectives to achieve a win-win outcome. So what do I mean by delighting, and why does it matter? When our values, priorities, and expectations are different and misaligned, which we'll analyze in depth in the awareness and empathy section, we enhance our bargaining power by addressing how someone feels. We are all emotional creatures, but the same incentive or provocation doesn't trigger our emotions similarly, which is why empathy can create so many advantages. When you recognize and learn how to delight those you need to trust and empower, replacing skepticism and contempt, you will significantly increase your odds of success. I spent the first 4 weeks in Nanjing pushing back against my global project manager in the Netherlands instead of following the standard operating procedure, SOP, because I knew it wouldn't work. These processes work everywhere in the world, so don't tell me they won't work in China. I almost got myself fired. I allowed the project to fall behind schedule by refusing to impose more stringent protocols. Instead of forcing everyone to follow the new procedures, I hung out daily with the VP of marketing and sales in her office, my workstream counterpart for commercial excellence. We drank tea and got to know each other, and I listened with a novel curiosity until we discovered the way forward. No, this isn't a story about listening and developing friendships. So we'll expand on a concept I call proactive listening throughout this book. We began developing our Guanxi relationship in Chinese terms. Then along the way, we realized a mutually beneficial outcome for having external consultants on site. So we aligned our goals and adjusted the project charter to include her wish list of initiatives. Subsequently, it received immediate top-down support. Top-down mandates are typical in a Chinese hierarchical bureaucracy, but lip service persists in creating inefficiencies. Chinese people are accustomed to responding this way to their superiors, which is traditionally the safest way to avoid any negative consequences. Therefore, I also had to delight the local sales team tasked with implementing the new procedures to achieve our goals. Perhaps I was lucky that one salesperson was a huge fan of NBA basketball. Maybe I was fortunate that I preferred eating in the local cafeteria, drinking and sharing Chinese tea, and going out for smoke breaks, even though I don't smoke. Are these the reasons why the local Chinese sales team began inviting me for dinner after playing basketball together? Is this why dinner and drinking eventually led to Chinese KTV, colloquially referred to as the next stop or 下一站, reserved for insiders who have deep Guanxi relationships. There's no way to say for sure, but I recall that I was always curious about how they felt about everything, project-related and personal. We talked for hours every day about nothing, and I naturally presented myself as an equal, even though my workstream counterparts were the vice president and CEO. Curiosity, which we will discuss throughout this book, should be natural, but it can be equally influential with purpose. And I shouldn't forget to credit my driver, the personal chauffeur assigned to pick me up at the train station on Monday morning, who drove me to and from the hotel every day. I sat in the front seat instead of the typical back seat reserved for VIPs, and we chatted as if we were from the same alma mater. Now, did requiring local Nanjing insights help me develop closer Guanxi relationships? At a minimum, my 40 weeks in Nanjing were more pleasant, from knowing local places to visit, things to buy, and places to eat. But the benefits of this relationship pale in comparison to my history with an unlicensed taxi driver in Shanghai, a Heita Siji, who granted me mafia-like resources at my disposal should I ever need to quote-unquote resolve a problem, 解决问题. I'll share this story in the Winning Interaction Patterns section, but you should be mindful that every relationship matters, even when you aren't looking for the phantom stakeholders. Now, what is this dilemma we face in China, and how can we reverse the negative interaction patterns frequently encountered? My experience, born and raised in the deep south of Atlanta, Georgia, I was always fighting against what I wanted to do and what I wanted to say, because my inner voice never stops reminding me that you get what you give. I eventually discovered a dilemma because what I offered was rarely received as I intended, and what I got in return often felt empty and meaningless. I once prided myself on having the ability to see through someone's BS, but viewing Chinese behavior through this lens caused me to misinterpret their acceptance of me altogether. My natural desire for people to tell me the truth because I could handle it and would appreciate it put me at odds with those who think and speak in relative terms. In other words, our interpretation of truth is a fundamental cultural dichotomy. I was taught to speak directly, answering yes or no to a simple yes-no question. But this becomes impossible according to what we expect from someone who thinks in relative terms. Imagine being asked whether you want courtside seats at Staples Center to watch the LA Lakers play the Golden State Warriors, without any additional context. Even as a huge NBA fan residing in Southern California, my answer would be it depends. How much will the tickets cost and what day is the game? The point is, whenever your Western logic asks a Chinese person a question, it likely lacks the context for them to answer, and their inclination always to give face or mianzi in their replies will further remove you from the answer you seek. So my first killer tip is to stop seeking explicit answers. In an environment where everyone is likely to tell you what you want to hear and what will result in the best outcome for them, asking such direct questions becomes pointless. Throughout this book, I hope you will learn to focus your attention on trends rather than facts, and cultural clues rather than explicit agreements, as your capacity to embrace uncertainty will pay generous dividends over time.